What if the world's most beautiful gardens aren't built with money, but built with community, patience, and a little creativity, and are so much more rewarding for it? Today, I am joined by expert gardener, renowned author Stephanie Rose, the author of the new book, The Wild and Free Garden. And Stephanie shares how buy nothing gardening, bartering, and shared resources can not just transform your garden, but transform your entire life. This book is interesting. This concept is interesting because it's this cheap, no buy, low cost garden, but actually it's about leaning on your community in the most beautiful and needed way. We'll explore how to grow more by spending less, why connection is the secret ingredient, and how letting go of control can lead to the most meaningful gardens. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy.
Hello, plant friends. If you're new here, welcome. If you're a returning guest, welcome home. My name is Maria. I'm your best plant friend, and I'm here to help you grow joy by caring for plants and tending to nature. And what's more joyful than doing something for free or getting something for free, right? So this is a really fun conversation. Before we dive into it, I just wanted to let you know part two of our Growing Joy in 2026 series is this Sunday at noon Eastern time. We're going to be talking about how to make 2026 the most joyful year yet by connecting with nature. And I know that this is a very scary time in our world. I know that it's hard to find hope and hard to find joy. And that is why it has never been more important for us to turn to nature to help regulate our nervous systems and find our own joy. Because if we lose our joy, if we lose our ability to be calm and collected and not in fight or flight, we lose, right? So if you'd like to join us, you can go to growingjoywithmaria.com/2026. The link will also be in the show notes. And I am offering a free replay of the first class in case you want to catch up before we dive into this second class. But you don't need the first class. You can just show up and you will receive so much from this community event. I'm so excited. Speaking of community, this is such a lovely conversation with Stephanie. So let's dive in. Welcome back, my friend.
Hello. It's so good to see you again.
I can't believe since I last saw you, you were last on the podcast spring of last year, you have written and published another book. You are the most prolific author I've ever met. What is the book? What is your count? What are you counting right now in terms of books you've published?
So this technically is 13 that I've authored. Okay. But I've been a part of so many other books. I've done photography for some books. I've done content editing for some books. I had a chapter in other books. But technically, this is 13. And so I was a little bit nervous about the number 13. But I put luck into anything. And I thought, now, lucky number 13, this is going to be a really different book.
It's
going to have a different perspective and a number to shoot it forward.
I love it. I love it. And I loved the book. You've been on the show before. I loved in this book, in your intro, you shared about your history and your first garden in that blue house. I would love for you to introduce yourself to the audience. We have a lot of new listeners this year, and share how you came to plants and your really mindful and wild approach to gardening.
Okay. So it was around 2006, and I went to Europe and I came back and I had a little bit of a headache, and it turned into a bad headache. And then it turned into a mystery illness, and I couldn't get out of bed for almost 2 years. Mm. So it was a really shocking part of my life that I didn't expect. And they still don't have an answer as to what happened. But in that 2 years, as I recovered, I was in my little blue house and I was pretty isolated. And there's so many similarities with our stories, which is what I love. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was really physical that started it. And then the emotional component came in of just being really isolated and lonely. So I started to go outside and just I thought, you know, I have this little square of lawn in the front of the house and a little square in the back. I'll see what I can do. So I got some seeds. I scratched in the soil and I started with just 5 minutes a week and moved up to 5 minutes a day. And over time, in 5 years, I completely transformed my garden. I was working in it for hours a day. It became this lush oasis and it completely transformed my life. I not only felt physically healthier, but I felt emotionally connected. And I met amazing people through community gardens, the master gardeners. I started a charity garden. And so I met these plant people. And that was part of the transformation that I started this book off with. I went all the way back to the beginning and talked about how I did it without a lot of money or experience and completely transformed my life.
Yeah. Can you speak? I mean, you shared vulnerably in the book, you had experienced a bit of homelessness at that period of your life. And this blue house was such a big moment for you to, you know, have ownership and what that first garden meant for you.
Yeah. So when I was a teen, I was on my own by the time I was 16. And there were periods, like long periods, where I didn't have any housing. I lived in a car. I lived in a friend's two-bedroom townhouse with 11 other people. Sleeping on the floor, just finding places where I could. Sometimes people with big houses would take me in and their parents would buy me food. But I kind of floated around for a while. And so when I was working and I had my first job, I was a director of marketing at an ad agency. And when I was just started that job, all of my friends, everybody who had graduated and was doing this work, they were taking these big trips and buying designer clothes and fancy cars. And I said, I want a house. Like I wanted to have a place where at least I felt like I was grounded. And so I pushed forward with that. And back in 2003, my first house, which was a previous grow up, it was a horrible renovation. It was on the market. Nobody wanted it. It looked terrible, but it had two bedrooms and one bath up, two bedroom, one bath mortgage helper. And so I took every dollar that I had and put it into this house and started putting in my elbow grease to fix it up. And I'm so grateful that I did that because, I mean, the housing market was a great place, you know, it was a great growth area, but also it's always made me feel a little bit more attached to the land. I never wanted to live in an apartment, a box within a box up in the sky. It didn't feel as good as the grounding you get when you can just step outside in your bare feet and walk through the flowers.
That's so beautiful and really speaks to, you're so impressive now, knowing that about you, which I didn't know. And now knowing that you've written 13 books, you know, it's just incredible what you've overcome. And interesting that when you started that garden, you really approached building those first gardens of yours with this free, no buy, low buy, low cost approach because there wasn't any other option. And I think a lot of people who start gardens think that it has to be this crazy investment. And, you know, there's all these like viral reels that are like, I spent $4,000 on this garden to yield, you know, $100 worth of groceries essentially for the summer or to grow this one tomato, you know? Why do you think so many people misunderstand the accessibility of gardening?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with how we've positioned gardening as a task or a chore or a hobby, when really it's just a part of our lives. This is what we were meant to do. Birds eat seeds and eat fruit and then plant the seeds by pooping them around, and that they're gardening, they're farming, they're propagating plant species. We are meant to work together with plants in order to help them grow. So what I've written about in my previous books is how we kind of have gotten in our own way, thinking that it takes a lot of human input for plants to grow. When truly plants want to grow, we are on the same page with them. We just need to learn enough about them in order to allow them to do their thing. The more we get out of the way, approach it with a little bit more humility, a little bit less ego, then we can learn so much and how easy it is. So yeah, I didn't really need anything to get started. I bought a couple of packs of seeds and got books from the library. And that's how I started gardening. And seeds are really inexpensive and available for free in a lot of places. Seed swaps, seed libraries, donations from charitable groups. So, you know, there's really a great opportunity for anybody to start gardening without having to have sort of a master plan of how it's going to turn out and approach it as a learning experience that helps them grow as well.
I have fallen in love with the public library system since I moved to Florida, because I work from home and I go a little stir crazy. So I take myself to the library to do like most of my admin because I hate doing it. And libraries are incredible. It's like, yeah, you can get free books there, but they do so much programming. They have a partnership with the Master Gardeners here where once a month they have a Master Gardener come and set up camp and they'll just answer your questions. Like they'll help you plan your garden. They'll answer your questions. They're just here for the public. And my local library has a seed library. And the cool part is I'm in Florida now. I moved from zone 5B to zone 10B. So I'm growing totally different plants now than I was growing, you know, in New York. And the seed library has all of the local species of plants because it's the local gardeners that are contributing to the seed library. And it's just so cool. So you talk about this like wild and free approach, almost reframing of gardening. Can you explain what that is to people who might want to loosen up if they have a very rigid approach to gardening?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I started with the wild and free garden because I had talked about doing a book that was a buy nothing, a zero cost garden. And that came from last year. Last year, I decided to do a buy nothing personally, a buy nothing or a low buy year, where I got rid of a lot of the major online shopping apps. I got rid of a lot of the massive, you know, like any big media, and put those, you know, in a place on my phone where I didn't access them, or I got rid of them altogether, got rid of all the subscriptions, and then started looking at that scrappiness that I had in that blue house. So I didn't have any money, but I had Craigslist and I had back alleys and I had resourcefulness. And so I went around and I looked at where could I find everything I needed to find. Back in the day, I did a whole backyard patio. So we did all the hardscaping and I found all the hardscaping materials on Craigslist. And the little nugget that I took out of that was I didn't need to plan in advance what the garden was going to look like. I needed to find some materials and incorporate, like build a plan off of what I could find. Uh-huh. So I found these patio pavers that were beautiful. They had two different sizes. They were like a charcoal concrete, but it was stamped like stone. And somebody had pulled them up from their yard to replace them with something else. And I used that as the foundation or the base of that garden. And so that transformation is shown there. And you can see how it went from just soil to patio pavers, and then the plants came in. So then I started using all of the resources that I could find. On Craigslist, I found a guy named Guy, and he had a backyard nursery where he would go and landscape at people's houses and take the divisions of the perennials, put them in pots in his backyard, grow them up, and then sell them on Craigslist. So I started buying plants from him. And then he said, I'm getting rent evicted. I need a place to store all my plants. And I said, well, I've got a sunny front yard. You can put them in my front yard. And he showed up and he brought 300 pots of plants and I put them in my front yard. And he and his team would come and divide them up every year.
Wow.
And so I learned about perennial gardening. I wrote about that in Garden Alchemy because the plants taught me. None of the pots had a label. It was just a little green leaf sticking out of 300 1-gallon pots. And
wow.
So I planted everything wrong because he just dropped them off and left. He actually didn't plant them at all. But as they grew over the years, I really learned about perennial gardening. I learned about, you know, little things that you could read about. But when you learn it this way, you know, lighter leaves need more shade because they can burn in the hot sun, lighter colored leaves. That, you know, the bigger leaves are typically shade plants, where the ones that have, you know, straight or thinner leaves can tolerate a lot more sun. And so just different characteristics. The taller plants that started to grow at the front were really hard to move if you let them get too big. But the little delicate plants were, you know, you could just pop them out and put them anywhere. So there's just, yeah, so much that you can learn if you don't have an agenda going in and are open to what the materials can help you grow your garden.
This episode of Growing Joy with Plants is brought to you by Manicora Honey, the richest, creamiest, most delicious honey I have ever had. It's why I've been talking about this product on my podcast for like 2 years now. If you've been listening, you know that I love Manicora Honey in my coffee every morning. I use it as a dupe for that brown sugar shaken espresso. And sometimes often in the afternoon, I'll pair it with some cheese or an apple as a snack. When I'm saying honey, you might be rolling your eyes being like, Maria, what the heck? You're picturing some sort of like honey bear shaped honey bottle at the supermarket. That's not what this is. It's single origin honey. And Manicora honey is actually honey that's come from bees that gather nectar at the Manuka tree, which is packed with bioactives that give this honey 3 times more antioxidants and prebiotics than regular honey. It is totally a game changer. And all you need is 1 heaped teaspoon each morning to get the most out of all of those amazing bioactives. Plus, it tastes like caramel. It's so freaking good. It doesn't taste like any other honey you've tried. And now, if you want to try Manicora honey, it's never been easier. All you got to do is head to manicora.com/bloom to save up to 31% plus $25 worth of free gifts with the starter kit. It comes with the MGO 850 plus Manuka honey jar, honey travel sticks, which are great. I take them on like long weekends, a wooden spoon, and a guidebook. So that's manicora.com/bloom to save 31% plus $25 worth of free gifts. Manucora.com/bloom. So I'll never forget when I was talking with Joe Lample of Joe Gardner, and he said, you know, the best investment you can make in your garden is in your soil and your compost. And most gardeners agree with this. If you're going to spend any money on your garden, if you can, you should spend it on the foundation, which is the soil and the nutrients for the plants that you are planting, right? And that's why I have loved working with Espoma Organic for so many years, because they are such high quality organic potting media, soils, composts, soil amendments that you know are going to set your garden plants up for the most success. So if you're taking a buy nothing or low buy approach to gardening, this is where it makes sense to be intentional. I will just share from personal experience, sometimes when you go and get the free compost or you get the free soil on the curb, it comes with weed seeds in it. It comes with toxins that you don't know about in it. So whether you're looking for soil for raised beds or whether you're just looking for amendments for your soil or compost for your soil, you should definitely look at Espoma Organic. Their soil amendments, fertilizers are designed to build healthy soil life, which means stronger roots, better growth, and more resilient plants, which is what we all want. So instead of throwing money at gadgets or quick fixes, invest in the foundation and do it with Espoma Organic, because when your soil is right, your plants are going to do the rest. And they have a wide array of both indoor and outdoor products for the gardener and the houseplant parent. So if you want to find out where you can get them, go to espoma.com to see their list of garden centers around the country. Find the one closest to you that you can go and buy products in person, or you can click the link in the show notes to go to my Amazon storefront where I've curated all of my Espoma favorites. Yeah, I love this approach. And it's interesting because I'm coming at plant parenthood from houseplants first. And to me, the houseplant parent often is more of a control freak than the gardener, because everything is about control when you're in houseplants, because you have to control the light and you have to be creating the soil and you have to be, you know, manipulating your indoor environment to make these plants thrive that wouldn't necessarily want to thrive in your home. I feel like gardeners have a much more relaxed approach to gardening and letting things ebb and flow and dividing things and moving them around your garden. But this idea, like I just want to highlight what you said of, I didn't need to plan. I just waited, like I sought inspiration. I sought opportunity and then I let the plan unfold there. That is like such a translatable skill in life, not being too rigid of this is the garden plan. This is how it needs to get executed. If it doesn't look like this, it's a failure. I think you end up getting much more individual and whimsical gardens when you do have that flexibility and you do flip stuff and you find things and they have stories attached to them in ways that, you know, your Amazon raised bed wouldn't. And no shade if that's how people are growing too. I've had many an Amazon raised bed in my life. But yeah, I just think that's a really interesting difference in the houseplant gardener minds. And also
I think, a necessary approach right now when there's so much we can't control, right?
Right. And there's also so much waste. So my buy nothing, it started from having this idea of wanting to reduce the costs of what I purchased, but also that there's great quality and designed materials available out there. More so than ever, there's an abundance. There is a marketplace of everything you could possibly imagine for really good prices if you just access it, if you access the sharing economy, if you find all those secondhand marketplaces, if you look for resellers. The quality, it used to be that you would think of something as secondhand or thrifted as more junky than what you can buy new. But I almost feel that it's switched now, where you can buy something very new and inexpensive, but the quality isn't there and it won't last the test of time.
100%.
Yeah.
A great example of that. So I redid my lanai this year, and very lucky that Crescent Garden ended up sending me a lot of shiny new furniture and planters for it. But I wanted to do a high-low approach to it. So I had these, you know, new and shiny planters and the gorgeous furniture. And then I wanted to thrift everything else to kind of bring it all together. If we put a table out there, it was my mom's folding mahjong table with a tablecloth on top of it. But my mom had these four chairs from my grandpa's house. They were older than me, these chairs. They were just wooden chairs. And they were in her garage. And she was like, hey, if you want these, like, they're in terrible shape, but we can sand these up and spray paint them and make them look like new and they'll look beautiful. And we also thrifted a coffee table that was glass and iron for $30. And she was like, let's go to Home Depot, buy the waterproof spray paint in the green color that I wanted. And then we spray painted the thrifted iron, and then we spray painted the chairs, which were wooden. And then all of a sudden we had this cool matching set, and we gave the chairs totally new life. And they're sturdy wood chairs. They're like unshakable because they don't make them like they used to. And it's so interesting how I could have just looked for chairs online and ordered them. But a literally spray paint, it was like two coats of spray paint and it was good as new and weatherproof outdoors. I feel like people don't understand like how easy it is. And Facebook Marketplace is just filled with people who don't even charge you for it. They just want you to come pick it up at their house.
Exactly. Exactly. We have a waste problem. You know, if you watch some of the documentaries or you research the consumption issues that we're currently having, the companies that sell things aren't responsible for getting rid to actually look at what the end of life of things are. Mm-hmm. So we have houses filled with, I have two people who live in my house and it's large because it's full of stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't need that much stuff.
Yeah.
So how much of these things can I give away? If I've got a huge pile of things that I need to rehome, and every other house in my neighborhood has a bunch of things that they need to rehome, I should never need to buy anything again. Mm-hmm. And what I will get will, like what you said about doing your, like, spray painting the coffee table, is that you personalized it. You made it your own. You kept something out of the landfill, but at the same time, you put that tiny bit of elbow grease into it that made it special. And so now it's not just every lanai that you've seen. It doesn't look like one that you'll see in, you know, every magazine just replicated. It has your personal touch, where when people come in, they can feel that. They can feel that energy and the specialness and the love that had you put it together that way.
And I get to tell the story behind it when they say, oh, what a cool table. And then I'm like, yeah, it was $30. I spray painted it. This is how my mom came over. This is how we did it. Yeah. You know, I think, and then that's a point of connection with someone that you're making. Your book is filled with these no buy, low buy, you know, no cost, low cost. You have projects where you walk people through, but I want to talk about these greater ideas because I think a lot of people don't even realize what's available to them for free. Me being one of them, I didn't know that my library had a seed library until I was there for something else and I saw the seed library, right? I would have never heard of that before. So let's talk about a couple of these kind of broader themes when wanting to go and source free things for your garden. And let's start with the modern day sharing economy, because you already started with that. So what is the modern day sharing economy? You mentioned Craigslist, not as popular these days, but used to be so popular before. What is the modern day sharing economy look like?
Well, there's so many different ways to find people online now that there's Now that Craigslist is, it still exists and you can still find things on there. But Facebook Marketplace has become a really large place. You said you found a lot of things on there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Were you surprised how much you can find? It's a great place to find secondhand things.
And they have special garden categories. Facebook Marketplace has a garden / outdoor category that you can click and your mind will be blown with all of the plants people are either giving away or they're selling seedlings for $3 a 6-inch pot.
Yeah. But going all the way to buy nothing, there's buy nothing groups and community groups. So there's lots of places, like you said, people just want to give stuff away. They want to, they've spent an investment bringing it into their home and it's got some sort of emotional attachment, or maybe it doesn't, it's just taking up space. But they would rather see somebody show up with joy and take it away than make a couple of bucks off of it. And if you are sharing a couple of bucks, then also, you know, that helps out everybody because we're keeping the money going within our community. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so buy nothing groups or local neighborhood groups, like next door, there's Buns, which is specifically for plant sharing. So it's like a community chat group where people give away plant cuttings. And I think it started with
houseplants. Oh, I've never heard of that. Is it an app?
It's not an app. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's an app, but I know them as communities. So it might be an app on your phone, but I know it as a, sometimes they start as a Facebook group. Sometimes they start as an email list. Sometimes
okay.
they start as some other community group. But they're, I mean, what I show in the book is that there is, because we're talking community and you live in Florida and I live in Vancouver, Canada, but we might not have the same communities available to us because there's going to be different ones in our cities, but also all around us, is I show you how to find them. So going on to Google and writing free plant swap near me, free community groups near me. What I have in my neighborhood might not be what you have, but it's truly an amazing system. We've got what are called buy nothing groups, which I think there's also FreeCycle. We don't use FreeCycle as much here, or I don't know if that one has gone by the wayside. I live in a neighborhood called Grandview Woodland, and our neighborhood is not that big, but it is divided into three sharing groups, North, Central, and South, because there are so many people involved in it, and there's so much sharing that goes on that the only way you can do it is to take our tiny neighborhood and divide it into three sections.
Wow.
The reason why these were created wasn't simply for us to rehome our stuff, but because community building makes safer and more connected communities. Mm-hmm. So the idea wasn't to, I'm getting rid of, you know, this old broken hose and I don't want to throw it in the dump, so I'm going to leave it out. But instead to offer something to your neighborhood. I, you know, I have a great working hose, but I have three of them and I only need two. So I would like to pass my hose on to someone else. And instead of just sort of throwing it out in the back alley and putting a note, anybody can take it, you post it in the group so that a neighbor comes over and they say, thanks so much for the hose. And you say, you're welcome. Have a nice day. And that little bit of connection helps us feel human. And it almost brings us back to when we were buying things instead of one click, same day delivery, drone dropped things. Mm-hmm. We would go to a mom and pop store in our neighborhood and we would buy something and the staff there lived in our neighborhood and we knew them and it created those little bits of connection that kept us going. So it has a greater purpose. And it ends up feeling so friendly. At first, when I was doing it, I'll be honest, I would want to bring them some handmade soap or like a cutting of a plant or a packet of seeds just to say thank you because I couldn't believe the things that people were giving away. Mm. But instead of doing that, I said, thank you. And they said, you're welcome. And they got a helper's high, mm-hmm. which is that little bit of boost of hormones that you get from being generous. And then it makes you want to be more generous out there in the world. So now I'm looking at, well, what things can I give back to my community? Mm-hmm. And what things don't I need? I don't need to have things. Somebody who is homeless often, and anybody who's been through this or been through this level of economic insecurity knows that when you do have some security, you can tend to hoard things. You can tend to hang on to things to go, well, what if it happens again? You get this scarcity mindset that makes you cling. And a sharing economy, especially in a local neighborhood, allows you to really open up and let that mindset go and understand that abundance is all around us if we just have enough community.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. That's the thing I love about this book. It's all about you know, free, easy, low-cost garden projects and how to build a garden for very low cost. But it really is about community, because that's what it ends up being, is about community and about leaning on each other. And you learn so much, right? Because if you're buying gardening stuff or seedlings from someone, they probably know few things about plants. And if you talk to them and you ask them about how they grew it, they're probably going to throw a couple extra plants in there for you. Or they're going to, you know, give you some really great gardening tips that you wouldn't get at your local big box store when you're buying a plant seedling there. So there's just so much to it. But I think, you know, before you go order something online, whether it be a hardscape or a container, a plant seedling, going to your local Facebook marketplace, going to your local Buy Nothing groups, going to your local, you know, community seed swaps, doing all those Googles really makes sense, even if it just opens your eyes to what's available. Thrifting too, when I first moved here, I wanted to thrift a lot of stuff and I had no idea how many thrift shops were in my area, and going and learning about all the different thrift shops and, you know, finding really cool stuff. Like there's a feeling of pride that you get when you source stuff secondhand that I don't think you get when you buy it full price.
No, and we've lost that idea of hunting and gathering. Instead, mm-hmm. Because our purchasing process has been made so efficient, it takes away the pride of finding something, thinking it through, and then actually making an effort to go and collect it mm-hmm. and make it your own. All of those things are great for us. Slowing down, yes, it might take you a little bit more time, but it's time well spent. It's
totally
not necessarily... And it's one of the things that I was cautious about with this book when I was writing it and when we were talking about the concept, was I didn't want people to think this was another book about thrifted junk, like
yep.
old tire in your front yard. You will
yes.
not find that in this. This is a design book, because what I've done is I've gone and I found the most high quality materials that you can find out there and showcased how they can be used. There is a beautiful greenhouse in one of the, I went to over 40 gardens. And
yeah, I was going to say, it's not just your aesthetic as well.
No,
you're highlighting a lot of other people.
Exactly. I went to go see what other gardeners are doing. I mean, it started because I moved into the house that I'm in now 2 years ago. And again, it was a square, just like my very first house all those years. I then moved into a second one. I wrote 12 books at that house. And then I left that one with life changes. And so my son and I, now single parent and with a cat and dog, we have our little house in the east side of Vancouver and 2 squares of lawn. And I took a whole year to plan how I wanted to design it. I didn't just come up with a design plan with pen and paper. I started collecting materials. I started exploring out there in the neighborhood. I started thinking, you know, how do we want to live here? How do we move through it? And then how does the ecology move through here? What's the water flow? Where does water pool? Where is there drought? Where is the sun? Where are deep roots from summer trees that are deciduous and too much sun in the summer and not enough sun in the winter? All those things. So I spent a year to really sort of work with the land and create this component of it really being free because of the materials that I got, but also wild as it connected with nature. But as I toured, I found the most beautiful places. So this one garden I wanted to tell you was, she was building a greenhouse, and Joan is the gardener's name. She was building a greenhouse out of old stained glass windows, very similar mm-hmm. to the one my aunt made that I have up here. It had this blue and white pattern, and the whole greenhouse was designed around this section of stained glass windows that she had found, and this beautiful chandelier on the inside. I mean, the most stunning greenhouse you'll ever see, mm-hmm. but it was all from reclaimed materials. And she is one of the queens of that in our neighborhood. So it's so nice to see. There's also,
which requires more patience than just yeah. ordering a greenhouse kit.
It you know, does.
There's a commitment there that you have to sign up for sure.
It is. But the results are so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So there was another garden that I visit that I just loved. Woman's son made a table out of a bowling alley floor. And so those bowling alley floors have just the most gorgeous wood. It's so smooth, and it had mm-hmm. so many sort of dents in it and a patina from the bowling balls hitting it. But it was a really, like, you would pay $1,000 for that mm-hmm. table in a store, where they just collected some materials that was being discarded.
So cool. Talk to me a little bit, because you kind of mentioned this about bartering, because you kind of bartered with that greenhouse with the backyard grower where you were like, okay, well, come put your plants in my front yard and I'll take some of your plants. So bartering, I think, is something that people forget about as well.
It totally is something that people forget about. It almost is uncomfortable when you first start doing it, but there are communities where people are getting more used to it. And the idea of saying that you will trade something instead of money, because we're so attached to a currency culture that we are bartering on a daily basis, but we're bartering with an intermediary, which is currency. Mm-hmm. So instead, just saying to someone, can I have space at your house to grow my plants? And in return, you get to have the mother plant and I'll take the divisions. That's beneficial to everybody. So there's no world where that doesn't work in a, doesn't have a great result for all the people involved. But you can do it in all sorts of ways. You can take the skills that you have. Like I said before, when I would show up at somebody's house and they would give me something for free, I would think, what can I give them? And I make soap. So I make a lot of soap. I have a lot of plant starts. I have, a lot of gardening books that I'm finished with that I've read over the years, and I have knowledge. And so I tend to trade those things with people if they need them. Say somebody is looking for the thing I needed the most is a single parent moving into this house with labor. I only have two hands and it gets really difficult to do some things completely by yourself. So I would have people come over and help me and I would make them big dinners, or I would share some of the products that I made, some of the soaps or some of the, give them seeds and plants. And that brought us together in such a way that I was constantly hosting parties, but I also had lots of people who were willing to come over and like pull apart a fence and help put it back together again.
Yeah. If you've been a longtime listener, you know this story. For those who don't, one of the most rewarding relationships in my life came from a barter with when I moved to the Catskills. I was out of my depths with the pest control in my first garden, like not pests, like bears. You needed all of a sudden there was a lot of stuff I wasn't used to using. So I used Nextdoor and posted like, I'm starting my first garden. Can I talk to any local gardeners who will hop on a phone call and talk to me about gardening basics in the Catskills. And this woman called me, her name was Melody. She was in her 80s and she was a lifetime gardener and had an acre of garden in her backyard, a greenhouse. We became friends. We chatted for an hour. She coached me because I was going to have my own garden on my property. And then we had some landlord issues. All of a sudden, I couldn't do a garden on my property. I had already started seeds. I had already did all these things. So I called Melody back up and I was like, I know you mentioned you have a greenhouse. I know you mentioned you're 80. What if I grew my plants in your greenhouse on your property and I'll help you plant out your garden? Like I'll be your labor. And for the whole gardening season, I would go over like three mornings a week. I would tend to my seeds and then she would have different garden projects that we would do that I would help her with. And we became best friends. She came to my wedding. She was the most like, it was such a we called each other our guardian angels. Like we were just sent to each other in such an important period of time. And she sadly passed. She had a cancer that came back towards the end of that gardening season. But, I got to like visit her in hospice and see her before she left. Like she was just it was so beautiful. And that relationship came from a barter, and from really Nextdoor, which is a modern day sharing economy. So I feel like people don't understand how often these situations can happen. Like you talking about getting that greenhouse grower to plant stuff in your front yard, my relationship with Melody, like people are so hungry for connection and they're so hungry for this. We're a tribal community. Like we're so hungry for this that I think if you put yourself out there, you'll be surprised. I could talk to you forever. We're already like coming to a close, but I have two more questions I want to ask you. Okay. I had no idea you could get grants for your own garden projects. So can you tell us more about that? That makes me very excited as if I just bought a house and thinking about what I'm doing in my first land that I own. Talk to me about grants. Talk to me about having other people pay for my garden. That sounds great.
Well, I mean, so there's a grant in our neighborhood called the Neighborhood Small Grants Program. And essentially, they have a bit of money set aside for neighborhoods to get together. You have to have at least two members of the neighborhood put together a plan together and get signatures from other members of the neighborhood to do whatever it is. And it could be like planting the boulevard garden or, you know, buying a bunch of wildflower seeds, planting that health strip where everybody's got now crocus bulbs for the entire street growing together and everybody comes together for a planting day. But it also can be as simple as a, you know, something that just shares and helps your neighbors come together, like a block party or buying gifts for all the people in the neighborhood, like a houseplant that you can drop off at everybody's house. And the reason why that program exists is to bring communities together. It doesn't really matter what you do. As long as you've got neighborhood buy-in, they will give you money to go and do something with your neighbors. And that's what we find is there's a lot of these programs that are created by people with really great ideas of how we can bring our communities together, how we can support pollinators, how we can add more green to our streets, how we can address food insecurity. All of these things are projects that have some sort of funding, whether it's through universities, through garden groups, through indigenous plant groups, through governments. All of these programs, if you can find them, want to give money. So the other thing is that some people think, well, I don't need money for my garden. But if you took it, what could you do with it? Could you create a pollinator stopping zone so that pollinators could nest and rest and feed on their way through? Could you create a garden that creates a gathering space so when neighbors are walking by, it just puts a smile on their face because it's full of cut flowers and you leave little jars on your, on your fence for them to take away? So again, that's a small project right in my neighborhood, but they exist all over. And I teach you the power of how to search for these things. What are the search terms you can look for? What are some of the organizations? You'll find that once you start going down the rabbit hole, you'll find there's a lot more out there. So it's like free pollinator supporting plants, you know, and my neighborhood, and see what comes up. But I recommend that you start with just an idea of what it is that you want to create. So what's something that you're passionate about? And if, like I said, it's something like pollinators or food insecurity, or like, I want to grow some vegetables so that I have more to feed my family, but I want to give the rest of it away. Well, great. So you've got a vegetable garden project that you want to accomplish. Now start looking at how do we search for that project in our neighborhoods and ask around for it and see who wants to support this project. So it's not about you doing a large proposal and actually doing the work to find somebody who will support it. It's just accessing the support that already exists.
Yeah, totally. I hope we're moving into an HOA neighborhood, so I'm scared of the HOA, but I hope I can get clearance to do. I would love to do a pollinator garden in the front yard, put signs, put educational signs, have the monarch, you know, way station, have the milkweed, have the, you know, all of the Florida natives. And I'm hoping, but I'm also just like you, I'm waiting. I need to wait to get into the house and see where the sun is and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. But the more people do projects like that too, the more it becomes more commonplace. And so 10 years ago, you know, you would have a much harder time with your HOA trying to do a project like that.
Yeah.
And you do now, because the more people who are allowed to do it, the more people who jump on the support bandwagon, the more people who see that a wildflower lawn is so much more beautiful than a mowed green turf grass lawn, then the more we can continue to beautify our neighborhoods and connect with plants the way we were meant to.
Yeah, totally. And then I think we just have to mention communities. We've talked about the online modern day sharing economy, but you can get real simple with this. You can Google your local garden club or your local, you know, there are local plant communities hosted out of plant shops, out of garden centers, out of the Master Gardeners programs. There's so much community offerings. And then those communities have the plant swaps. Like, you don't even have to do anything. You just have to show up. So yeah. What would be your recommendation for finding community where you might be able to find labor help, labor support, or free plants, you know, free other stuff?
I mean, it could be as simple as just if you're looking for something, if you have something to offer, you could put a sign up on the posts around you, a signpost with the little you know, pull the phone number and they can call you. You could start talking to people in your neighborhood. Just start those conversations. As people are walking by, you're out walking your dog, you're gardening in your front yard, and people stop by and they say, I really love your yard. You say, thank you so much. Where do you live? What is your garden? Do you want any of these plants? Can I share them with you? Mm-hmm. Do you know anybody who needs plants? Tell them to come on over. Start sending out messages like that. Then there's the organized ones that are really hyper-local in our neighborhood. Schools are always doing fundraisers. There's always a parent that's into gardening and wants to organize a plant swap or community gardens for the children. Mm-hmm. Community centers often also have the same sort of thing. If you have any botanical gardens, look for your local garden club, your master gardener's extension, mm-hmm. all of these places. And you can really get nitty gritty. Like if you're really into succulents and cacti, then you could join a desert plants club. If you really love orchids, you could join an orchid club and mm-hmm. or an epiphyte club. So, you know, these are, if you really love mushrooms, join your local mycology association and you'll head out to the forest and look at all these different mushrooms and maybe figure out how to inoculate a mushroom log in your backyard.
And now there's a lot of native plant societies as well with the rise of native plants.
Exactly, exactly. And we've already talked about libraries. And, you know, there's so many opportunities, but the idea is just to start thinking about what you want to accomplish and start talking to people. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, that it takes a village, that, you know, we're disconnected. And so being part of wanting to be part of a village, it means you have to start to be a villager. You have to start to contribute. You have to start to reach out to people. And so the more you can, you know, reach beyond your garden gate to other people, and just, it can be as simple as somebody's walking by and they want to chat about the garden a little bit more. You could invite them for coffee. You could invite them in for a garden tour. You could give them some mint so you could have a cup of tea together and they could take some home and make it later. You know, these are all ways that we just continue to build deeper connection.
Yeah, totally. One of my friends here, that's how we met. She knew I was a plant lady and she was like, I have so many plants. You want to come over for coffee and I'll show you all my plants? And I was like, yeah, I want to do that. And well, she sent me home with cuttings.
See, that's the secret. And that's how you and I met too. I mean, we met at a conference, but I immediately liked you and we really got along because everybody who I meet that are plant people are beautiful people, generous, sharing, loving people. When I left my role at the ad agency and started gardening, it helped with the loneliness, obviously, mm-hmm. but also it brought in so much joy. I mean, that's not a concept that you're unfamiliar with, growing joy. It's the people who love plants are some of the most amazing people. So if anybody's feeling lonely, all you have to do is walk up to somebody else who loves plants and start talking about plants or soil or seeds or something like that. And you're going to have a friend for life immediately.
100%. Well, this book, like I said, it's filled with practical. I mean, we didn't get into any of the practical crafts and projects that you talk about, but you have tons of, you know, low cost projects, garden projects, also lots of, you know, keywords for Googling and stuff like that. So tell us everything about your book, the name, where we can find it. It's on pre-order right now. And also where we can find you.
Great. So yeah, you can find The Wild and Free Garden at everywhere books are sold as of February 23rd, but it's available for pre-order up until February 23rd. And hopefully it will get into lots of libraries too, because I really believe in that whole structure. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have it at your local library, please ask for it. It's a great book to sort of buy and share and give to share some of that information. You can find me and more information about the projects that are in the book and my history and my projects on
Garden Therapy. And your 12 other books.
Yeah, all my other books on garden therapy. So I started garden therapy back in 2009 and it's gardentherapy.ca. But if you Google it, any combination of Stephanie Garden Therapy, Stephanie Gardening, Stephanie Rose, I usually come up pretty easily because I'm garden therapy on every social platform.
And we'll make sure to link everything in the show notes too.
Wonderful. The other thing I'm doing right now is I have a free newsletter that's going out. It's called What's in Season. And I pick a number of projects every week and send it out to everyone. So I'll give you the link for where people can sign up for the newsletter. Perfect. And start to get weekly seasonal ideas for how they can get their garden growing.
Inspo, especially for all of us, you know, in the Northeast, in the midst of winter, when we're getting itchy, it's like we need some planning. We need something to think about. So that's perfect. Well, thank you so much. And I can't wait to have you back on the show again, hopefully very soon.
Yes, I would love to come back. We have so much more to talk about, I'm sure.
Totally.
All right. Thank you, Stephanie. I love her. She's definitely going to come back. She's a very special plant friend of mine who just gets it. She zooms out and gets the wider appeal of gardening and how we're really not just gardening for plants and beauty. We're gardening for joy and community and built resiliency. And her book, if you look at her many books that she's written, she's always a couple years ahead of the trend. She can kind of see into the future. And I think now more than ever, we need community and we need friendship and we need support more than ever. And this book just has so many different interesting invitations for that. As we buy our first home and as I move into our first home in Florida, I'm definitely going to be thinking about a couple of the projects in her book and leaning on my local library, as I have been doing, which I'm so in love with. So you can find Stephanie and her books in the show notes. And of course, my plant friends, until next time, keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.